Hi everyone, I'm Mary Catherine Arbor. I'm delighted to be here. And to start, I have no relationships to disclose. On February 27, 2010, an 8.8 Richter earthquake occurred in Chile. This is the sixth largest recorded earthquake in the history of recorded earthquakes. And it was so big that it actually shifted the Earth on its axis and shortened the day by more than a second. This occurred 100 kilometers north of the second largest city and 500 kilometers south of the capital, so it affected 6 of the 15 regions where 80% of the population lives, and 521 people died, more than 2 million were injured. 370,000 homes were either destroyed or damaged, and this represents more than 11% of the housing stock in the affected regions. As a result of all of these, 2,000 children younger than 6 years old were displaced with their families to live in temporary housing camps that were sponsored by the government. And these contained single-room dwellings for the entire family, electricity, and some basic sanitation services for the camps. This study is among the first to examine well-being of displaced children living in these camps after the earthquake. Historically, children have been an understudied population in disaster research. But over the last two decades, there's been expanded research across a variety of types of disasters and cultural contexts that show that children may be among the most at risk for negative effects of disasters, particularly in areas of mental health. So studies report that 17% of child survivors may experience anxiety, 30% depression, and half to three quarters may experience symptoms of post-traumatic stress in the weeks, months, and even years after a disaster. The severity of those symptoms has been linked to the exposure to the disaster itself, traumatic experiences resulting from the disaster, for example, real fear for losing one's own life or the life of someone else, and history of traumatic experiences prior to the disaster. So significant advances have been made in the effects of disasters on children's mental health, but two major gaps remain, and these are the gaps we choose to focus on for this study. First, few studies consider overall post-disaster child well-being across multiple domains. So Weisbecker et al., who are disaster researchers, describe children's post-disaster experiences as a cascading series of life stressors which may last for months or even years. And they posit that child well-being or child outcomes may be better predicted by immediate daily stressors more than by disaster-related specific stressors. So for example, food insecurity, caregiver instability, and ongoing exposures in their proximal environment. But very few studies look across those multiple domains for impacts on children. Second, very few studies include children this young. So Osofsky et al. Have hypothesized that younger children may be more vulnerable for the negative effects of disasters through two major mechanisms. First, they're in a very important developmental phase where their physiological stress response is being formed, and cumulative daily stressors over time can be accumulated into maladaptive stress responses in this period. And second, young children are less likely than older children to access support outside of their nuclear family. So if their nuclear family is affected, they're much less likely to receive kind of support or have external sources of resiliency and recovery. We had two guiding research questions for this work. The first was, what unmet needs are young children living in camps experiencing, considering multiple domains? And to what degree are children's needs predicted by baseline characteristics versus exposures, including exposure to the earthquake itself, exposure to stressful events after the earthquake, and exposures to ongoing risks in the proximal post-earthquake context? This is a cross-sectional direct interview-based study from a convenient sample of three public health clinics serving 15 camps in the 8th region. This is the most severely affected region of Chile, conducted between October 2010 and January 2011. In this study, public health providers conducted structured interviews with caregivers and their children who presented for primary care. There were 140 child caregiver dyads who were interviewed and observed, which represents 71% of the children younger than 5 residing in those 15 camps. And it's important to mention that this was a collaboration between a team of researchers at Harvard and the Chilean Ministry of Health, Ministry of Social Development, and a cross-sectoral child protection program. Chile has an exceptional interdisciplinary program, which was created in 2006, that provides universal services for children from gestation through 5 years old. So that includes physical health services, emotional health services, access to financial support for poor families, parenting and self-efficacy classes. And it coordinates services across 13 ministries at the national, regional, and municipal levels. So we were working in partnership with this program that had 730,000 enrolled children at the time of the earthquake, and their priority was identifying unmet needs. In the first phase of the disaster recovery, their priorities were ensuring ongoing care for children with chronic conditions and providing kind of emergency psychological first aid for families for how to talk to their children about earthquake and disaster. But 9 months later, their priority was identifying unmet needs among children in these camps so that their intact program could try to address those needs. That informed the choice of our instrument, which was the Child Status Index. The Child Status Index is not a diagnostic tool, and our partners didn't feel that diagnosing children 9 months after the earthquake or diagnosing a prevalence rate for anxiety or PTSD was useful to them. They really wanted to look at unmet needs in a practical way, and this instrument mapped onto their interdisciplinary structure quite well, and you'll see why in a minute. They adapted and renamed this, they translated it, it was reviewed by experts in child development and instruments in Chile, including researchers, representatives of UNICEF and PAHO, and then it was applied by public health clinicians in interviews with caregivers to assess exposure to 12 post-disaster stressful events and current well-being and unmet needs across 6 child domains. This figure shows each of those domains and subdomains. So first is nutrition, second is health, including health status or physical health and access to health services. Third is stimulation. Fourth is psychosocial situation, including emotional health and social conduct. Fifth is caregiver stability and protection, and sixth is housing. And as you can see, each of these domains and subdomains provided open-ended questions to create a conversation through which the caregiver and the primary healthcare provider would then rate each child on a Likert scale. So 1 through 3 were unmet needs among children, urgent, alert, or at risk due to unmet needs. And then 4 or 5 were good, no current unmet needs, or 5, very good, unlikely to develop needs in the future. Each one of these domains had guiding questions. So just to take as an example, nutrition, you could ask, how many meals does the child consume daily? Is the child's energy level appropriate for his or her age? And these were really suggestions and jumping off points for a broader conversation. And then each domain had operational definitions for what the Likert scale represented. Rating 5, very good, was the child receives a good quantity and quality of nutrition, eats regularly, no history of or indication of underweight and normal activity. All the way down to 1, which was eats small quantities and sporadically, rarely has sufficient food, complains frequently of hunger, has a history of and current signs of underweight and diminished activity. Our analyses include a comparison of our sample to the regional and national populations of 0 to 5-year-olds. Our first research question will present the frequency and types of stressful events experienced and differences tested for with chi-squared and Wilcoxon rank sum tests. And for our second question, predicting children's unmet needs, we use univariate and multivariate regression with dependent variables of unmet physical health, emotional health, or social conduct needs predicted by baseline characteristics, earthquake experiences, post-earthquake stressful experiences, and ongoing exposures. So these categories were added sequentially. We examined the fit of the models across each of these. The baseline characteristics are those presented here, sex, age, and pre-earthquake trauma. The earthquake experience we proxied by distance to the epicenter or distance to the coast, given the presence of tsunamis after the earthquake. And post-earthquake stressful events and ongoing exposures, nutrition, stimulation, stability, and protection. Our first findings are that the population that presented from IDP camps for evaluation were not representative of the regional or the national population. And you can see here they were much more likely to be male. They were likely to be younger, so only 5 or 6% of them were between 60 and 72 months as compared to the national population, 16%. And finally, they were much more likely to be poor or indigent. 85% of our sample was poor or indigent as compared to approximately 35% nationally and regionally. The earthquake was the first major stressful event for most of the children in our sample. 5.5% had had some previous trauma, and these were things like they'd lost or been abandoned by an attachment figure, or they had chronic illness that affected the child himself. Since the earthquake, 81% had experienced one stressful event, 40% experienced two or more, and 7% had experienced four. The most common stressful experiences are the first four presented here. They affected a third to half of the children and included changing neighborhoods and therefore stopping playing or visiting former neighbors, witnessing a loss of his or her home, losing the majority of toys or belongings, and the child witnessing his father, mother, or a caregiver lose emotional control in an unusual way. The final stressful event presented here shows the only significant difference between boys and girls, and that's boys were much more likely to witness public social disorder and delinquency after the earthquake. Within the first 24 or 48 hours, in some sections of the 8th region, there was looting, and communities armed themselves and patrolled their own neighborhoods, and so it seems that boys were more likely to be exposed to that than the girls. I'm going to skip this, but importantly, none of the kids in our sample lost an attachment figure or their primary caregiver. This table summarizes the child status index findings. The first column are the domains, the second are the subdomains. The third shows the mean score by domain, and the fourth shows the percent of children with unmet needs. The last five columns are the details of the child status index by Likert scale. And the first important finding is that in every domain, more than 20% of children in our sample had unmet needs. 93% had unmet needs in housing, which is unsurprising given where these children were living. 29% had unmet nutrition needs. 29% had unmet emotional health needs. 24% had unmet social conduct needs. 23% had physical health needs, and 20% lacked access to health services. 21% lacked protection, and 20% lacked sufficient caregiver stability. 20% lacked adequate stimulation. The mean score by domain, with the exception of housing, which showed a mean score of 1.9, ranged from 3.9 to 4.2. And if you remember, 4 is good. So in most of these categories, there weren't that many children who had unmet needs. But when we looked at the frequency of mean score by child, it shows that 20% of children scored below 3 when you average their score across these domains. And it reveals a subgroup of children with unmet needs in multiple domains, despite the kind of high averages across domains. Our results of the multivariate regression, I'm presenting the final models here. As I mentioned, we added these predictors sequentially. And as we added them, the R-squared went up and the standard errors went down. So these are the best fits. Once all of the variates had been added, none of the baseline characteristics or earthquake exposures were predictive of child outcomes. The post-earthquake stressful events were predictive of child outcomes. Witness social disorder predicted worse physical health and predicted worse social conduct. Witness loss of home predicted worse emotional health and worse social conduct. And a seemingly counterintuitive finding was that the total number of stressful events as it went up, the scores for social conduct got better. And our interpretation of this, considering the magnitude of that coefficient, is that as children experienced more stressful events, they got more accustomed to it, they got used to it. But it's a smaller impact than either the witnessing social loss of their home or social disorder. The ongoing exposures in the proximal context predicted all of our outcomes. So better nutrition predicted better physical health, emotional health, and social conduct. Better stimulation predicted better emotional health. And better stability predicted better emotional health and social conduct. So in conclusion, this study underscores the interdisciplinary nature of child development. We saw that in each domain, 20% or more of children had unmet needs, and a subset of children had unmet needs across all of these domains. Also, we learned that children's well-being seemed to be more affected by witnessing abrupt, frightening events than by loss of objects. So for example, witnessing the loss of home predicted poor emotional health and social conduct, whereas changing neighborhoods, which implies losing your home, did not. And finally, physical health, emotional health, and social conduct needs were predicted by post-earthquake experiences of stressful events and ongoing exposures, and not by baseline characteristics or proximity to the epicenter. So in other words, these were best predicted by things that are amenable to intervention. The implications of this study apply to Chile, but also apply to future post-disaster recovery efforts, particularly those that are beyond the immediate emergency phase and into the recovery phase. So post-disaster research, relief, and recovery should assess and address multiple domains of well-being and function, including mental health outcomes, but not restricted to only mental health outcomes. And validated instruments are needed for this. There aren't many validated instruments. Caregiver education should emphasize reducing opportunities to witness distressing events. This is consistent with research that was done after 9/11, but we find this again in our population in Chile. And the factors most likely to predict poor physical health, emotional health, and social conduct outcomes were proximal content exposures amenable to intervention. So in Chile, this provides clear targets and priorities for policymakers and providers, and for the rest of us, it provides kind of a new focus moving forward for post-disaster research and recovery. I'd like to acknowledge the foundation that supports my work in Chile and the Center on the Developing Child at Harvard, and I'm happy to take your questions. Thank you.